Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/hamnation. And by DX Engineering, your exclusive worldwide high-Z receive antenna dealer. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation. And by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 121, October 30th, 2013. George builds an intercom, and of course, it's Happy Halloween. Good evening, everybody. Yep, it's me, K9EID, and I'm in Illinois tonight. Been traveling around, but we ended up here, and we're in an empty room. You used to see this room, adjacent here, full of radio equipment, which is now someplace else. But I wanted to be sure and come in and say hi to everybody while we're on the road. It worked out really good. So I hope the I know the picture's not as good and all that, but here we are. So we'll see how she goes. And happy Halloween to everybody. And I got all of my cohorts here all dressed up, though. Gordo, how are you doing in Costa Mesa?
Meow. just catting around, and we trapped a few birds. In fact, we're going to talk about traps tonight, but all is well here. This weekend, I'm going to be working with the Lake Arrowhead, the Emergency Communications Group out of San Bernardino County Fire Department. All those volunteers, I get these feathers out of my mouth, we'll see them this coming Saturday. Back to you, Bob.
All right. Well, you look grand, absolutely. And speaking of grand, let's go down and pick up George in Mississippi. George, how you doing? I missed you, buddy.
Oh, Bob, we missed you too, and glad you're back this week.
I love it.
Excuse me. It's a little itchy in here, but we're going to have a fun time on the show tonight, Bob.
All right. Yeah, cool. And then we have to go meet up with Mr. Don, and I think he's got some Blues Brothers with him. How you doing, Don?
What's happening? Yeah, blind Mississippi ham bone in the house tonight. You may not know this, but I'm a dyslexic blues man. Yeah, I'm on a mission from Dog.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, it's good to have you all, and I'm glad you picked things up when I'm not here. And real fast, I'll show you guys where I was on one or two of the nights. We were really excited about the Wrecking Crew. Hey, Don, you know about the Wrecking Crew, don't you? The session players?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think we talked about it. George, you know about the Wrecking Crew?
Oh, I do, and I'm hoping that movie will get around here sometime.
Well, they'll get it. And Gordo, the Wrecking Crew, is right near back door.
They're fabulous.
Got together for some screening. There we are, and you'll see myself and Denny Tedesco. That's the son of Tommy Tedesco, who kind of led that group of 20 great studio musicians. And beautiful, wonderful Sarah, who's been sponsoring a lot of these around the country for Denny, and we're very excited to see this thing move forward a little bit. And that is Tony Stubblefield. He owns 4 dealerships in Springfield, car dealerships. He's a guitar collector, and that guitar they made special at the Fender custom shop for him, and he was the big sponsor of the show. And then that was Tony Orlando. Tony was there, and several other celebrities that played with Tommy and all the gang. And we had a good time, and that was great. So it'll be coming around. The screen will come around your town. And if you don't know what we're talking about, put Wrecking Crew film into your Google or wherever. check out Wrecking Crew Film. There's a little clip of it. And when you listen to the Mamas and the Papas, and you were listening to the Beach Boys, and when you were listening to the Tijuana Brass and all this, it was the Wrecking Crew. They might have sang, but it was the Wrecking Crew playing all of these incredible hits. It's such a big piece of music history, but it's always been kind of, it wasn't a secret. It just, they didn't want to be known. They were just in a day job. It's really a fascinating story. Anyway, that's where I've been, out with Denny and Sarah and all those guys. You'll want to go see some of this. It's really, really cool. Great stuff. Great stuff. So that's what we've been doing. And I understand, George, that Ray, ICOM Ray, has been out. Tell us a little bit about what you received from him this week.
Yeah, of course, Ray and a group have just returned from Mozambique, where they did a de-expedition out there. And I never was able to get in on it here. I tried listening to them, but I'm antennally challenged, I guess, when it comes to that part of the world. But a lot of folks did make contact with them. And Ray said it's really just quite astounding what a 12-meter pileup sounds like when you're on the receiving end of it. We've got a little audio clip here.
Right. QRZ C82 Delta X-ray.
So there you go. I couldn't pick out any calls. So it's amazing that you can even get into something that's that crowded, isn't it, Bob?
Well, it's it takes a good ear and perseverance. Gordo, did you work these guys, or I'm sure you heard them out there?
Oh yeah, we heard. You didn't hear my call sign in the background on that last audio clip? I didn't hear it either, but we tried.
You were probably the tail ender. What are you talking about? Yep. Oh, yep. Golly. Well, that was all fun stuff, I'll tell you. And I know a lot of guys worked them. So there you might have heard yourself on the recording. So we'll wait to hear from Ray more as he gets back and tells us about that. We've got a lot going on tonight. I have to tell you, there's some tremendous stuff coming up about the whole happenings that's going on in the whole world of Hamfest and so on. But I got to tell you about one, and you want to mark this down. In about 10 days, the Midwest ARRL convention is going to take place in Lebanon, Missouri. And Brian, if you got some of those slides, show us a couple of pictures of this place. We're very excited about this because the Friday night of this convention, that'll be a week from this coming Friday, on November the 8th, that beautiful theater is part of this magnificent convention hall that this thing's going to be in. On that stage, you're going to see George and myself, Carol Perry, and a whole host of others. We're going to do the first ever live audience Ham Nation. And one of the TV stations is coming in to tape it on some very professional cameras. So they'll put this in digital form. And a couple of weeks after that show, after they get it edited, we will then have it as a show for you. And it's going to be fun because it's going to be live. The audience will be live. So what you need to do is check your calendars and fill your gas tank up and head out Route 44 and come down to Lebanon, Missouri. It's right on I-44, which is actually, I think the convention hall is on the old Route 66. It's a beautiful town. And boy, we have a lot of things in store. All the majors are going to be there. I can't believe it. I've never been to a ham fest like this, other than Dayton with all these majors. It's really something. ICOM, Kenwood, Fleck. Here I am, Gordo. I'm going to start naming them. I'm going to forget some. But they're all going to be there. So you want to check it out. Just put in your browser, Midwest ARRL Convention, November the 8th to 9th. And if any of you can make it down on Friday night, 6 o'clock, you can be in the audience because we don't know what's going to happen. We got some wireless mics scored here for that thing, Gordo. So we can have people roaming the crowd. You think we can have some fun with that? Yeah.
Oh, that'll be great. And I promise I do have the electric pickle and the pickle fryer that we'll bring. So if ever there's a power outage, it may occur in Lebanon, Ohio. No, not Ohio. Illinois. Missouri. There we go. Missouri in another week and a couple days. Back to you, Bob.
Yeah. That's the boat capital of the world. I don't know how many boat factories are there, but a lot of them. And we're just going to have a lot of fun. And George, you got your soldering iron fired up for that. But while you got it going, why don't you go over here and let's see what you got going tonight and smoke and solder. I think it's really interesting. So let's hear from George and his soldering iron.
Okay, Bob. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to meeting up with y'all next week and having a big time out there. I can smell the fried pickles now. So, you know, last week I showed a little piece on one method to attempt to check the primary and secondary impedances of a transformer. This is just a method that I had found online. And, you know, what I measured didn't exactly equal the impedances of the transformers, but kind of, you know, gave me an idea and kind of put me in the ballpark as to what they might be. I had a number of people write this week and said the reason that I was not getting the correct value exactly is because I didn't have a load on the oscillator, or that the oscillator impedance wasn't correct. And yeah, I realized that. And the reason I did not put a load there is because we were trying to determine how to measure the impedance of an unknown transformer. So that's the reason I didn't use a load. But if I had put 600 ohms across there, it would have more than likely been much closer to the actual value when I got around to measuring it. So this week, we're going to do another little fun thing. This is something I did as a kid, and I'm sure a lot of others out there did, but you may not have seen this before, so let's take a look at my cheap intercom. You know, in Smoke and Solder, we like to mix it up a bit and do a lot of different things. Sometimes we'll build kits, sometimes we'll solder connectors, other times we'll try out different techniques, and sometimes we'll talk about theory. And other times, we just do stuff for the heck of it, because we can. And that's what we're going to do this week. There are a lot of different kind of intercom systems available, from wired units to wireless, and all different price ranges, standalone units, units that work over your power line. There are circuits that you can build intercoms from that are fairly simple, don't have too many components in it. I'm going to build an intercom without spending a dime. Even if you had to go out and buy all the parts, you could probably still do it for less than 10 bucks. Most of you should have this stuff laying around already. And it's only going to take three parts. And here they are. Two speakers and a 9-volt battery. Now, you may have seen this done before, but I'm guessing there's a lot who haven't. We're going to need a little bit of wire, too, so I'm going to use some test leads here. You might say, where is the microphone? This is it right here. You know, a speaker is a transducer, and so is a microphone. So we can use this as a microphone. You can actually play music through a microphone as well, and using it like a speaker. Not a good idea, but it is possible. So let's hook it up to a scope here and see if we've got any voltage coming out. Testing 1, 2, 3. We can see that we do have voltage here on the oscilloscope. It's about two divisions here on peaks. We're set on the 20 millivolts per division scale, so that means we got about 40 millivolts of signal, and it does seem to be more pronounced on lower frequencies. That's because of the resonance of the speaker. Now, the way we connect this is in the schematic here. We've got the two speakers. We just connect a wire between them, And then we connect one lead of the battery to the remaining two terminals on the speaker.
Run!
Now when we do this, we're going to have a little static. A little popping sound. I'm sure you heard that. And now we can just talk in this speaker and the sound should come out over here. Let's see if that happens.
Hello, test 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. Do you hear me now? You probably hear me a little bit direct as well as what's coming from the speaker because it's not very loud. That's just the way it is. Maybe a little bigger speaker would give a little more sound. It's not very loud, but it does work. Let's measure the value there of the voltage now.
You might think when we talked in the speaker here now with the battery connected, we'd see more voltage on the scope. But let's see if that's the case. Test 1, 2, 3, 4. Test 1, 2, 3, 4. We're seeing essentially the same voltage that we saw before. And so how does this work? How is the battery actually helping to amplify the signal enough that we can hear it out of the speaker? Well, it's not doing with voltage, so there's only one thing left it could be, and that's current. And because speakers are low impedance, they're primarily current-driven. So that's how this works. Nothing amazing here, but it is kind of interesting that you can build an intercom with just a pair of speakers and a battery. So there you go. Like I say, it's not very loud. It's really not as loud as you heard it here on the video, but it does work. Now, coming up in a few weeks, I'm going to be building another kit here, and I wanted to give you a heads up because there's likely a number of you out there who'll want to build this. This is a two-tone test generator from Hendrix Kits. You can find it at qrpkits.com, and it's going to generate two tones there that we can use for testing sideband equipment and various stuff. So if you need one of these, you don't already have a two-tone generator, might want to pick up one and build along with us because we will be using it in the future on some tests. Well, last week I asked a question, what would be the normal impedances of a transformer that you would connect from RCA jack, like on a piece of stereo gear, and connect it over to something with XLR connectors? I was hoping for a few more correct answers on this. I really only got one. That was what I was hoping for. And that came from Roger, KJ6WSO. And he said an RCA to XLR transformer would typically be 10K ohms to 600 ohms. Congratulations, Roger. You're going to win the MFJ Universal Belt Clip, just a little pouch here that'll fit any handy talkie and give you some way to carry it around. So congratulations again, Roger. And next week, I've got a question here that comes from the ARRL General Amateur Radio License Exam. And the question is, which of the following describes an integrated circuit operational amplifier? A, digital. B, MMIC. C, programmable logic. Or D, analog. So if you think you know the answer to that, then send your answer to me at hamnationcontest@gmail.com. Particularly if you wear a size 10 shoe, because next week's prize is a pair of these great Heil Sound Converse All-Star high tops. Who doesn't want a pair of these? But it's a size 10. So if you don't have a size 10, you can still register and then find somebody who can fit into these. Or you could just frame them and put them on your wall, whatever you'd like to do. But send me your answer to hamnationcontest@gmail.com. We'll see who gets it right next week. And right now, let's go to Don and get a message about Audible.
I need a pair of those. I wear a size 10, for crying out loud. Hey, let's talk about Audible, something that you can do in your sneakers or your dress shoes or dressed up as a blues brother. You can do Audible on, look at this, on your iPad. Yeah, I'm listening to George Orwell, 1984. You can do Audible on your iPhone. I do that as well, driving to and from work. Audible.com is a great service. It is the leading provider of audiobooks. There are more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all kinds of literature. I mean, you saw the classic there, George Orwell. Fiction, nonfiction, periodicals, it's all there. And for listeners of Ham Nation, Audible has a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. One audiobook you might consider downloading, like I'm listening to 1984 here. Been really, really good. I've been enjoying that. Stephen King's Under the Dome, which, of course, you know, the TV show was on. I don't know if they're going to continue that, but that was a great read. Completely different from the TV show, but there it is right there. Really, really good. Really, really seriously good to read. Now, to download that audiobook or any other audiobook you want for free, you go to audiblepodcast.com/hamnation. audiblepodcast.com/hamnation. Just amazing, amazing stuff. And I want you to go there and, again, check that out. It's audiblepodcast.com/hamnation. If you don't have time to read, you do a lot of time, spend a lot of time driving behind the wheel. I know Leo Laporte has been an Audible subscriber forever, and it's a great way to spend your time driving. Don't just mindlessly listen to music or whatever. Get into some literature on audiblepodcast.com/hamnation, and we appreciate Audible's support of Ham Nation. Gordon, I believe it is your turn with some short shots, huh?
Yeah, it is short shots time. And today we're talking about high frequency. And high frequency mobile antennas use a coil so that a 20-meter whip is not a quarter wavelength physically long, but it is shortened via the coil. And you've probably seen this coil. This is the Hustler coil that we use for loading a mobile whip on a single band to have it resonant. And the larger the coil, the larger the coil, the higher the Q, the lower the losses, but it becomes quite band restrictive as to how far that antenna will work outside of where you've set it. Mobile. Well, now let's talk about base station. And one of the most popular antennas comes from DX Engineering, and it's the five-band trap vertical, as well as they sell the very popular Cushcraft A3 and A4. These are multi-band antennas, and the way multi-band antennas work is, yeah, they've got a coil that we see here, but it's part of what we call a trap. And the trap assembly is a coil surrounded by an outside conductor tube that adds capacitance. And traps, as soon as inductive capacitance, inductive reactance meets capacitive reactance, we have resonance. So let's take a look at a typical antenna and see what might work. And as Tim says, K3LR, the trap antenna is one of the most popular out there. Now, of course, Tim and his team, Rod, WNAR, and Parkey, KB8UUZ, they would much rather have a multi-band antenna be a single band because that's where the efficiency is. But let's take a look and see what a multi-band antenna might look like. And there's my tower, and we've got the 6 meter on top, and that is the multi-band antenna just below it. And the multi-band antenna has traps, and you see those traps as the little bulges in there. And if we take a close look at how a trap works, we'll see that on 10 meters, the signal goes out just far enough to the first trap at 10. The energy circulates within that trap and doesn't go any further. 15 meters goes through the 10 trap to the 15 trap and circulates around and doesn't go any further. And the 20 meter goes all the way out to the end, but we have a 40 meter add-on kit, so we add one additional trap. Normally, traps do their thing, and they vertically or horizontally keep the energy going where it should be. Here we see a trap antenna for 10 meters at the very bottom trap, and then 15 meters, and then 20 meters, and then 40 meters, and then way up at the top, a series circuit, a resonator for 75 and 80 meters. This is a very popular five-band trap vertical from Hustler that DX Engineering sells a ton of because they have such a great ground system. Let's take a close look at these traps. We were having a problem with the 15-meter trap. Now, the first trap That's the 10 meter, but the one right next to it is 15 meters. And what was happening, it was intermittent. And that is, as the wind was blowing and the driven element moved up and down just a little bit, we began to have a little bit of a problem with that second trap, the 15 meter trap. Well, what the heck can go wrong with a trap? A trap is a coil of wire. Well, first of all, we take a look at a very common problem, and that is where the coax joins the antenna system. No, this was not part of mine, but as you can see, that's a pretty ugly connection. So if I had an intermittent problem, I'd probably first start looking here. Beyond the coax connection, we then take a close look and see how the antenna traps are placed onto the elements. And as we look at the elements, and they'll be up here in just a second. Come on, elements. And we're sending our code. There we go. That is the trap. That is suspect. But here is where a problem can occur, and that is where the elements slide together. Unless you use the conductive grease that comes with the antenna, and they say use this grease a whole bunch, it can develop corrosion. Well, we checked this one out, and it was clean as a whistle as soon as we unloosened that hose clamp. But we were still having problems with a trap. Well, what the heck can go wrong with a trap? I'm holding on to the outside X of C, capacitive reactance, and that capacitive reactance sleeve covers the internal coil. We always want to make sure that the holes that may allow moisture to drip out are facing down. Gravity rules. Okay, the holes are facing down. The trap antenna is still intermittent at the 15-meter band, which is our second trap. So we're trying to figure out what's going on. Well, we can take the trap apart gingerly. And when we do, we see that as soon as we remove the capacitive cover that is attached to one or both ends electrically, we then see the internal windings. And these windings look clean as a whistle, but this was a brand new one that failed out of the box. This was about a three-year-old project, so it didn't happen just recently. But it is one where the trap was no good. Well, let's take a look at what we just found out with the latest one. Same trap, but on the other side. What can go wrong with this? We see the left side and the right side. Looks like it is a good connection there. But as soon as we checked it out with an ohm meter, guess what? We found out that there was no connection between the wire and the aluminum via this connection right here. And the reason probably was they didn't scrape off enough of the shellac to make a good connection. And just the movement of the trap up and down was causing this to be a bad connection. And we want to thank Rod, WN8R, and Parky, KB8UUZ, under Tim, K3LR, DX Engineering's direction for guiding us to what could be the problem. And sure enough, this three-year-old antenna, that was the problem. So if you've got a trap antenna, then if it's working fine, then don't do a thing. Just make sure that the little drain holes are indeed pointed down. Marvel at the antenna. Remember, that first trap out is the 10-meter trap. The second one is 15. The third one, 20 meters. And if the antenna is misbehaving on a single band, probably it is the internal coil on one of those traps, because the outside capacitive sleeve may be terminated well to each of the elements, both sides. So that's causing the signal to go through that, what would be a bad trap for just that particular band, yet all the other bands seem to work out fine, as the case here. So thanks for taking a look at trap antennas. And I think that's our last shot. And the antennas are terrific. But one of the best things about the trap antenna was the capability to be able to contact DX Engineering and have them immediately say, let me get to our technical crew. And they certainly did. A couple last items. Dan Perry, KK4UOK, a brand new Ham Nation viewer. Welcome aboard. And last week when we showed some of those specific on HamCon show photos, we want to thank Pete Harris, KE6ZIW. He came through with a bunch of them for Ham Nation, and we'll be showing additional ones shortly. So that's your lesson about antenna traps. Remember, the holes need to go down. This is the outside sleeve that may or may not be terminated to both sides, but at least one side providing the capacity, X sub C, and the internal is the coil. And what went wrong with mine twice in a row, three-year-old antenna, was that a bad connection was at the coil. And it was resolved by simply loosening things up, scrubbing the heck out of it, making a new connection, didn't need a new trap, and we're ready to go. Thanks, DX Engineering, for your help in solving this problem. Okay, Bob, let me turn it back to you for another scary show at your end of the circuit. Go ahead, Bob.
Scary stuff here. I'm still playing with my train. you see, we're in the Illinois house, and we have this wonderful G-scale train in this particular family room that runs up about 9 foot above the ceiling. And it's how I started my whole electronic search for things to do was with electronics. And I know a lot of hams started their whole ham radio career, I guess we could call it, with electric trains. Well, mine's still going. But I enjoy it. It's been a lot of fun. Week before last when I was on, oh man, I got so many emails, and I love hearing from Andy about microphone technique. And you know, that continues on. There's so much that you need to pay attention to when you're doing microphones. I have, of course, over the years, learned a lot about just the physics of microphones. And the most important thing is to get dynamic and transient response. And you can't do that when you guys use these desk stands and back way off. We showed that last couple of weeks, but I'll do it again. It's going to be maybe even more prevalent in this room because it's a big room and it's very hollow. And every time you double the distance, you lose 6 decibel. And that's really amazing because you'll lose so much energy, and it's all done with the microphone because it all starts with the microphone. Of course, you know, you can use headsets. This is a kind of a special headset for me. It was our first headset in 1985. I was asked to build this headset. This was the OBN. And it just worked great. And we then lost some tooling. So here, about 6 months ago, we started putting it back into production. And it's back on the market. It's wonderful. It's lightweight. The headphones are just terrific. And I like it personally because again, it's lightweight, and it doesn't cut off the whole room. Now, there are lots of others, and we make them also that do cut off everything from the outside. But in some of your casual operations, kind of nice if you can, in my case, if I can hear Sarah, if she wants to say something to me, you can hear things. But then there's maybe others that I think. But the main thing is the microphone, and you need to get a boom, desk stand, whatever, but speak into it. Don't sit back away from it. The other thing about microphones that's very important is the cable. I just can't tell you how important it is to use good quality cable. And a lot of times, manufacturers the matching microphones, the cable is not very good, and it creates a lot of RFI. And a lot of noise. That's one of the things I hate with some of the wires is you move them around. It's very noisy. And that's the wire. It's not manufactured correctly. So you want to pay attention to that. And the stuff that we've done, you got to look at HioWire. It's amazing stuff. I developed it specifically for me. That was some years ago. But then I thought I better share that with everybody because it's really great wire. And the connectors are very important. And every once in a while, you want to take your connectors apart. Don't be afraid. Take them apart and make sure that there isn't any sediment in them. Do it dirty. And then you really have a big problem because it leads into other situations. So check all this stuff out. Don't be afraid to take things apart. And preventing maintenance is always very important. And we're going to get further into some of the mixer things. We've got some great questions. And so when I get back to Missouri here, and after we get through with the ARRL Midwest Convention next week, we're going to be able to do some more of that for you. So any questions you have, send them to me, and stay in touch because we want to help you. That's what Ham Nation is all about, is helping you and answering your question. There again, there's so many of you guys that have been getting your license, and I like the kind that you got relicensed. You have been out of the hobby for a while, and you got back in, but you weren't quite sure, and you found the TWiT Network, watching Leo or Tom Merritt or some of the great programs on the network. Bingo, you found Ham Nation, and here we are. Stay in touch, please. It's very important that we're here and to help you, and that we know what you want to hear. So we'll go through some of these subjects, but stay on that microphone. And last but not least, you don't need to speak right into it. You're better off to speak at about a 45, or even sometimes if the microphone of them aren't, even off to a complete 90, and you won't lose anything. A lot of microphones, you get off this way and you're lost. But we develop microphones with a very special pattern. And you get off about a 45 degree, you don't get the P-pops, as we call them, the breath blast. And we're all different. We're all different. Some people, when they speak, they a lot of air, lots. And others do not. So that air is what causes the diaphragm to pop. And the other thing, if you have a mixer, you can reduce the low end a little bit. That also takes some of the P-pops away. But the correct use of a microphone in the right orbit, so to speak, that's the answer on it. So don't let it get away. Well, Don, let's see what's new down your way. I think you've got some news for us. What do you say? It's really good to see all you guys. I missed you all.
These are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, October 30th, 2013. Hams who are members of Australia's Wisin have been activated. This fire is raging in an area called the Blue Mountains, threatens to expand. Amateur Radio Newsline's Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF.
Already some 200 homes have been lost as wildfires rage in the Blue Mountains of the Australian state of New South Wales, not far from the city of Sydney. News reports attribute one death to the wildfires. A state of emergency has been declared for the area, and firefighters worry that up to four separate blazes could potentially combine to form a single massive fire front. Compton Allen, VK2HRX, is the president of Wisin in New South Wales. He says that an official activation has begun, drawing on the resources of the Emergency Communications Group. Currently, the mobilisation is to support the declared state of emergency with manpower in the Lithgow area to the west of Sydney. About 1,200 firefighters were battling blazes across the state. New South Wales Rural Fire Service Commissioner Shane Fitzsimmons said personnel had volunteered to help from all across Australia and from as far away as here in New Zealand. The ground effort is being backed with more than 80 aircraft, which are dropping water and fire retardant on the flames. Evacuations of tens of thousands of people are possible if hotter weather conditions combine with fire fronts already burning. This is a scenario that is literally changing minute by minute.
Wisin in Australia is comparable to a combined Aries and Races here in the United States. Astrophysicists in India are joining with amateur radio operators to track and read data on Comet Isin. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Emby, KB3TZD.
With the assistance of ham radio operators, scientists at India's Institute of Astrophysics will send a neon gas-filled balloon about 130,000 feet into the stratosphere in late November to gather data on comet Icen. Ram Mohan Suri, VU2MYH, is the director of India's National Institute of Amateur Radio. He says that the Institute of Astrophysics has joined forces with Durva Space and his organization for the project. Suri says that this type of joint mission has never been attempted before, but that trial runs have proven to be quite successful. He notes that an amateur station has been set up by the Institute of Astrophysics. It and two mobile units will track the balloon and monitor its instruments as they record data from comet. Specifically, the instrument package will take detailed reading of Icen's mass, composition, inert gases, and aspects of its nucleus and tail. Once the balloon bursts and the instruments parachute back to Earth, it will be a team of amateur radio operators that will track and retrieve it from anywhere in India or abroad, presumably using APRS. The location of the payload and balloon will be posted online in real time so that amateur radio operators throughout the world can follow the mission.
Comet Icen is classified as a sun-grazing comet. Studies suggest that Icen's nucleus measures somewhere between 1 to 2.5 miles across, and it has a distinct green glow at its tail. The FCC has dismissed a petition for rulemaking that sought to expand technician class operating privileges on 10 meters to permit holders of technician class tickets access to the FM portion of the band from 29.52 to 29.7 megahertz. Under current rules, novice and technician licensees may operate from 28.0 to 28.5 megahertz, but are limited to CW, RTTY, and other data modes from 28.0 to 28.3. They also have limited single sideband phone privileges from 28.3 to 28.5 megahertz. Radio Amateurs of Canada has announced the granting of 3 academic scholarships and 1 community grant. The recipients are Pauline Malls, VE3PJM, who's attending Carleton University, Jason DeGlint, VE7TJD, a student at the University of Victoria, and Liam Bindle, VE5LRB, attending the University of Saskatchewan. Each of these young amateurs will receive a $500 academic scholarship to assist their further studies in electrical engineering. Shaftesbury High School in Winnipeg will also receive a $500 community grant to assist them to become the only permanent amateur radio heiress telebridge station in Canada. This under the guidance of Mr. Robert Streamer, VE4SHS. And congratulations to all. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news brought to you each and every week for 35 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. All right, always some good stuff, and man, I enjoy putting those little videos together. Let me talk to you a little bit about DX Engineering. DX Engineering is the newest sponsor for Ham Nation, and DX Engineering is now your exclusive worldwide Hi-Z antenna dealer. Yeah, for over 5 years, Hi-Z has been making some of the best receive antennas available. Now you can get in on the action with these systems, and you can get them only at DX Engineering. DX Engineering can help you with no matter what you're doing. You know, they helped Gordon with that antenna. They can help you with yours, too, and Hi-Z antennas will help you listen better on the 160, 80, and 40-meter bands without taking up a whole lot of space on your lot. The Hi-Z systems are powerful. They're very compact, though. You won't have to sit on the sidelines when it's time to hop on those low bands, and that's where the fun is. There are several 2, 3, 4, and 8-element options, up to 8 direction switchability, and you can find out the full details on each array at dxengineering.com. You get on the 160, 80, or 40-meter bands without putting long beverages across your neighbor's yard. It's a small footprint antenna. It's easy to install. It won't eat up your lawn space either. And depending on the system, they use 60 to 200-foot spacing between antenna elements, and the element amplifiers use a circuit configuration that will give you exceptionally accurate phasing and amplitude stability, and that's important. And they can be configured for up to 30 dB front-to-back ratio on 160. Top-quality Hi-Z amplifiers are included with every system. They're rugged. They're designed to take all of Mother Nature's wrath, and you can power them easy with just 13.8 volts DC. And if you've got the AM broadcast station nearby, the systems work on high RF fields. That means it makes them perfect for chaotic RF contesting environments. And they offer filters also, Hi-Z does, that will attenuate signals to maximize the in-band performance. And a high-pass filter can help protect your radio or preamp from those, too. High-level AM broadcast signals, low insertion loss on both those means it will not affect the signals that you want. DXEngineering.com is your portal. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All your ham radio needs right there. You can even order in the middle of the night, and your order will be pulled and ready to ship within hours. I want you to go to dxengineering.com/hamnation. That is an amazing website. You can learn more
and start shopping right now. Also request a catalog. And remember, you can get free shipping on any order over $99. DX Engineering, your exclusive Hi-Z dealer and a valued supporter of Ham Nation. And we thank them for their support. DX Engineering and K3LR, just great, great, great people. Let's head up to Kansas and see what's going on with Dale and show me your shag. Dale, how are you tonight?
Hey, pretty good, Don. Arrgh, I'll tell you. Just got back from the Caribbean, so we thought it would be appropriate this Halloween season to dress up like a pirate here. But we got a news and photo-packed edition of the Ham Nation video segment tonight. So we'll jump right in with the top news story. Big news and a QSL premiere this evening, all from John Amadeo, NN6JA. He's the producer of ABC's Last Man Standing. 2 weeks ago, we asked you to send in a soundbite with your call sign, and more than 100 of you did just that. John and the production crew liked it so much that they had Julian, N3JF, mix all of the sound bites into a simulated pileup. We're going to bring up a slide of Mike operating with his son, Flynn, and he talks on the radio for the first time in this episode, the Thanksgiving episode, at 8 o'clock Eastern time on Friday, November 22nd. And when he does, a pileup results. Let's listen now. Did you hear your QSL, your call sign in there? Oh, what an amazing thing. They're going to be having that particular soundbite on the show on November 22nd. Now it's time for the premiere. And courtesy of John Amadeo, we are going to show you something that hasn't been seen anywhere before, and it's Mike Baxter's new Season 3 QSL card. If you'd like one, send your QSL to the address on the card, KA0XTT at 4024 Radford Avenue, Bungalow 17, Studio City, California. That's 91604. Now for the real treat. How would you like a QSL card from Mandy? She has her ham ticket now and a call sign and her own QSL card. Well, you send your QSL card to her at the address on the card, and you'll receive yours courtesy, or hers rather, courtesy of the Last Man Standing crew. And by the way, think about that call sign Mandy has for a while. Let's bring up our first video now. It comes from Tom Appleneck, WA2IVD. He helped a number of scouts work toward their radio merit badges last month. Let's watch.
Hi, I'm Tom, WA2IVD. The California Inland Empire Council held their annual Stampede Camporee from September 27th through the 29th at the Glen Helen Regional Park in DeVore, California. Hundreds of scouts and scouters attended. One of the main activities on Saturday was a merit badge midway, where scouts could get an introduction to any of dozens of different merit badges. I had the privilege of running radio merit badge sessions throughout the day. The scouts were interested to learn about the many facets of radio, and ham radio in particular. A number of scouts expressed interest in completing the merit badge, and a few are looking into getting their technician license. The San Gorgonio Pass Amateur Radio Club also had an information booth set up at the Camporee. Mike, WA6UIJ, Harold, KI6YTH, Sam, KI6NME, and John, KF6POG, demonstrated HF, VHF, and some digital modes. Scouts who attended the merit badge sessions could complete one of their requirements, to visit a radio installation, by stopping by the W6PRC booth. It's always fun to introduce young people to our hobby. Thanks to Sean, KJ6VQC, for taking some of the pictures and video. And thanks to you for watching, N73.
We had the pleasure of spending about 10 days on the MS Zyder Dam with 93 other QCWA members last week. And we thought it'd be nice to show a few photos. Calling up the first slide here, every day at sea we had two or three forums covering interesting ham radio operations. And Brian, if you bring that slide up, we'll move right through these. I'll say an ARG at the end of each slide change. Larry McAlvey, WA9JMO, he's in the front row there, and he's coming up in the next slide also, was the gentleman who organized the QCWA cruise for everyone. ARG, Keith Pugh, W5IU from the AMSAT organization, gave a fascinating seminar about amateur satellite radio. He helps clubs set up QSOs with the International Space Station, a really fantastic program. ARG, Harry Hodges, W6YOO, an 85-year-old Vietnam veteran, taught DX101 and presented the details of the RSGB Islands on the Air program during the cruise. ARG. Jerry Gross, WA6POZ, operates the QCWA ICOM 706 from the game room on the 10th deck of the Zyder Dam as QCWA President Ken Olelke, VE6AFO, fine-tunes the radio. ARG. And here's the Skyhook. It's a multiband dipole about 8 to 10 feet above the 11th deck, 11 stories above the saltwater ground. ARG. And contacts were made on the first call from this great operating location during the worldwide sweepstakes this past weekend. Here's another QCWA member points out a station's location as VE6AFO makes the log entry. Well, that's it for the Qs. It was a fantastic time. If you get a chance to go on one, I would do that. Our next video, and probably the last for this evening, will come from Gerard Thompson, M3XYP. It features Rex Harper. He's W1REX from Tuna Tin QRP fame, and he was visiting the GQRP Club mini convention in the UK.
Okay, hi, my name is Rex Harper, my call sign's W1REX, and I'm from Limerick, Maine. I'm your friendly tuna can guy. I sort of fell into something that I think is just so hilarious, I had to write it. And what we have here is the original Tuna Tin 2 transmitter. I have, this is on loan from the ARRL Museum, temporarily. And I brought it over here to Rishworth GQRP Club Convention in the UK to sort of show the tuna off over here in the UK. And I'm the guy who puts together tuna can kits. I started off first with my version of the transmitter, and then I had to come out with a receiver. And then I had to come out with a more powerful transmitter, then a RF amplifier, then I had to do an antenna tuner, and then a beacon transmitter, and some crazy projects that fit into the fish can. I love the idea of small, simple kits that are fun to build and fun to play with, things that you can build very quickly, an evening or two, without much money, and just have a blast playing with the equipment as opposed to building it. So I'm over here having a very good time in the Rishworth Convention. I wish I could stay longer. Come on over and see it sometime. And I'm on the web, qrpme.com. Is that good?
That's good. Okay, Rex, thank you very much. Thanks you, Gerard, for sending that video to us from the UK. I had another video lined up for tonight from Skeeter Nash in 5ASH. We're running a little short on time. I'm going to skip it, bring it in next week, and you'll enjoy it. It's all about how he prepares amateur radio newsline. But as we go out, let's bring up the club website of the week. That's www.sftarc.org. It's in Olathe, Kansas. The Santa Fe Trail Amateur Radio Club website was nominated by Jim Cessna. He thinks it's one of the best. Each section of the site has photos of an associated event. On the repeaters page, you can click on each frequency to bring up all the additional information. Give it a spin, and if you'd like to nominate your favorite website as the Ham Nation Club website of the week, send an email to hamnationvideos@twit.tv. By the way, we have links to all of the Ham Nation Club Site of the Week websites on www.hamnationvideos.info, along with all the videos we've presented. In closing, congratulations go out to Dan, KK4UOK. He was active in the 70s. And after watching an episode of Ham Nation, he decided he needed to get back on the air. He used Gordo's study materials, just received his new call recently. His son's working on his technician license now, and Dan's helping Boy Scouts and the local troop get their licenses. Fantastic job, Dan. Congratulations again. That's it for tonight. It's just about time to see how things are going in the chat room with Cheryl, K9BIK. But first, let's check out the latest from ICOM.
Just got your technician license and want to get on 10 meters? Have you upgraded to general and want to expand your band experiences? Maybe you're just on a budget and want an HF radio. ICOM has the rig for you. Check out ICOM's IC718, a great utility radio. It's a practical option for casual HF operating. It's sturdy and compact with comfortable knobs and buttons, a great layout and easy to follow menus. It's perfect for the newly licensed ham. It's got superior basic performance and DSP is included. Want big rig features in a small package? Try the IC7200. It's a small footprint and rugged. It even has a weather-resistant front panel. It features ICOM's signature IF DSP technology, selectable filter width and shape, excellent receiver performance, and it's ideal for portable or emergency situations. Look to the celebrated IC7000 for the ultimate multiband mobile, portable, or base station rig. It's a multi-mode HF, VHF, UHF transceiver. It's compact with a colorful, crisp display and feature-rich interface. No need to buy add-on filters. Filtering is built in using DSP technology. It's compatible with many optional ICOM accessories for just about any installation. And it's got incredible third-party product support. For the latest multiband mobile, check out the IC7100 and take your hobby with you. Smart design with an easy-to-read touchscreen, a slanted control head with a built-in speaker. It's got 32-bit IF DSP control digital features. ICOM Smart Menu System gives you context and mode menu items, and it's D-Star ready with a great near repeater function. It's got a built-in SD card slot for voice and log storage. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM's entry-level HF radios.
And tune in and register to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation and throw your name in the hat to win some great swag like hats or T-shirts. But when you enter, you'll also automatically be entered as well in the monthly rig giveaway contest. And for October, ICOM's giving away that great IC7200 with IF DSP. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation and register right after the show tonight. It's your last chance this month. And ICOM's also giving away another rig. It's a multi-band all-mode IC7100 that's sitting beside me right here with the touchscreen, D-Star, all the features you want. If you're interested in that one, then check out amateurlogic.tv/contest and register to win that IC7100. That'll be given away next month. And now I guess we should go to Cheryl and see what's going on in the chat room tonight. Cheryl?
Hey, happy pre-Halloween, everybody. I just thought I'd say it's good really to be here, and I wanted to show you my new Halloween feature phone. I mean, creature phone.
Tearing up.
My new phone.
That's great, Cheryl.
To the grave.
That's great.
I'm coming for you.
I definitely will be coming for you guys on after show QSO, looking for check-ins and drive-bys on 75 meters as usual. 3.847 megahertz, guys and ladies. If you want to check in, I'll be there after the show. But in the meantime, welcome back there, Bob. Good to see you. It has been a little bit of time, so good to see your shining face.
Yep, glad to be back.
So let's see here. I wanted to just ask you a couple questions. I've got VE7WNK, Bob. He says, can you ask if any of the hosts, and I'm gonna ask all three of you, because let's start with you, Bob, K9EID. Have you taken part in the CQ WWDX single sideband contest this last weekend? Were you involved with that one, Bob?
No, we've, as you probably know, we haven't been around the radios to take advantage of any of that.
Well, I certainly still had to ask. You never know what you might have remote. That's always a possibility, too. So how about you, Gordo? Did you get a chance to do the CQ WWDX single sideband contest this last
weekend?
Oh, yeah,
absolutely. All right. That was fabulous band conditions, even though we had X-class flares and M-class flares, 10 meters from the West Coast, opened up even before the sun came up to Europe, midday, Alaska, all the way to Buenos Aires. And in the afternoon, Japan and China and all of those Asian hams came pouring in. 10 wow. meters, just amazing. But the 6 meter band never opened. And we were ready with our big Innov antenna. No six, but let me tell you, 10 was hopping for technicians between 28.3 to 28.5 for voice and below that for CW. Back to you, Cheryl.
Thank you, Gordo. That's really good. And George, did you get a chance to do the CQ WWDX single sideband contest this past weekend? VE7WNK, Bob wants to know. I'll go over to you, George.
No, I didn't this week. I had some things going on this past weekend that prevented me. I've done it in the past, and it is a lot of fun. Sure. But let me ask you, did you?
No, I have to be honest. I didn't. I did talk to Mozambique, though. I didn't get a hold of the N9JA, but I said that last Ham Nation, so I'm saying this double. But it was worth double the amount to go all the way there to Southeastern Africa. It's a Portuguese-speaking nation, by the way, and quite beautiful. If you ever check that website, those pictures that they had out there were just fantastic. So anyhow, here's one from someone we all know, Skeeter N5ASH. He wanted to ask, here's an honest-to-goodness question for any of the guys, he puts, who want to answer. And I'm going to have to say, Bob, again, I'm going to go to you, K9EID first. Which type of antenna works better for the higher 20 and above bands, a horizontal dipole or a vertical? Go ahead.
Well, it really doesn't have to do with polarity on these bands. It depends on horizontals work great, verticals work great. It isn't like a vertical is better on this band or horizontal. That's been my finding because things do change as they move through the ionosphere. So usually you're going to have better reflections and takeoff with verticals for long distance. But it isn't one of those, well, a vertical is better on this band. Ben, what do you think, Gordo? How do you answer that?
I absolutely agree, Bob. Verticals are terrific if you live in a wet, swampy area like Don lives on. A down-to-earth vertical will do well for a low angle of radiation. But if I want to hear Don out here on the West Coast, I'd probably hear him better with a dipole. So, Cheryl, both are great. They're both unity gain, about 2.0 over an isotropic, but they both work well.
Well, very good. That's a fair answer. A couple of both is the answer. So it's like you like white wine and red wine, sort of the same thing, but they're really fine either way. I've had, you know, gap Titan antennas that were vertical, and, you know, this is just a mystery antenna, which is working out pretty well, too. So I think that's my favorite so far, but everybody has theirs. And, Bob, again, we have VA2 XMX Peter, I have to keep hitting you up, Bob, because you haven't been here. I got to give you twice as many now. He says, and he'd like to know if you ever have plans to do a beginner's guide. And I think that's written. I didn't get him to re-answer me. I did pose that back to him. A beginner's guide to audio mics and mixers, etc. Over to you, Bob.
Ohio Ham Radio Handbook. There's quite a bit in there for beginners as well as advanced. So you want to pick that up. There's a lot in there. And I think you'll learn a lot just reading through the audio channels. And that we've tried to make it pretty simple, but yet it wasn't too simple. So check it out. And it's on Amazon, by the way, if you want to get a copy of the book. Why, go to Amazon.
We got there a video freeze.
There it is, right there. Cool.
Oh, there. Okay. All right. You can get that book from Mr. Heil on Amazon, so check it out there. And there again, there is one more legacy question I have for you, Bob. A non-call sign person, Web8896 says, Bob, why don't you make the PR780 anymore? Microphone. Just curious on that legacy mic.
What the only difference there, is, well, the 780 was made when the 7800 came out, and Dr. Inouye wanted two elements in it. So we have switches in there that switched them. Otherwise, we didn't need that with all the equalization in the radios today. So we use the in both of them. There's no difference. So that made the 781 become the choice. And it's really a fabulous piece because we wanted to be able to work it into just about any radio, and it does. So that's why we've progressed a little bit, let's say that.
Okay, very, very good. Always moving forward. That's the goal, anyhow, for most of us. So I do have one for you, too, George. I'm not meaning to leave you out by any means here. But from KI6LSB, Tim, he says, if he has his dipole antenna going from east to west, now that's the parameters, his dipole antenna going from east to west, what DX stations will I hear? George, over to you.
Let's see. I would say mostly DX stations outside of America. That's a tough question to answer. I would say he's probably going to hear Canada and Mexico with it. I'm not sure what he'll get off the ends there. You know, it all depends on the conditions, how high you've got the antenna, and things like that.
Sure.
It should work off the ends as well, but this sounds more like a Gordo question to me.
Well, all he needs to do is to, boy, that bird was good, let me tell you. All he needs to do is to raise that feed point and droop the ends, as George was saying, and now he's going to get reception both off the ends, north and south, east and west, with the inverted V dipole. Back to you, Cheryl. Meow.
Meow. Well, you meow, meow. You're not off the hook yet, Gordo. I've got two for you, and then I think we're going to wrap it up here. VE7ORA, and he says he types that Steve, so we're going to call him that Steve. He says, question for Gordo. What, if any, loss or issues would one have spray painting the Hustler vertical you showed? Would that have an effect? Gordo.
Okay, that's a great question, and DX Engineering gets that question a lot, and I have used a non-metallic spray paint, and no problems at all, and I've spray painted them blue, sky blue, as well as green, and they blend in well. Just make sure there's no lead in the paint.
And no powder coating? That wouldn't work?
Powder coating would probably work great, but again, make sure that it's absolutely non-conductive. Spray a little bit and stick your Simpson 260 test leads in it and make sure that you don't see real high of a read. And you'll get something, but not real high.
Okay, very good. Interesting. Very interesting. All right, and last but not least, certainly not last, it might be last but not least, Daniel85 is the writer here. He says, can you ask Gordo if I get the GROL, the GROL license, before an amateur one, I really need a job first. But would I get any credit when taking a tech or a general exam?
Okay, the GROL is a commercial exam, and unfortunately, the HAM exams are different, and they don't have cross credit. So, sorry, no credit. However, when you take your HAM exams after passing the GROL, you'll be able to breeze through tech. You'll sail through general, and half the questions on the GROL are straight out of the amateur extra exam, and the W5YI group has all of those available for his study. Back to you.
Very good. Thank you very much, Gordo and George and Bob, for your answers tonight. And keep your questions coming, chat roomers. We love it. And that's what we're here for, especially me, to connect you to our hosts with those answers. So let me just say happy pre-Halloween here. There's always the little talking head here. We will see you. And I guess I don't know how this camera's working, but he says he's going to be on the air and make a contact with me, too. So, anyhow, until the next time, I'm Cheryl S. at K9BIK. I'll see you right here on Ham Nation. Take care, guys. 73.
See you,
All right, everybody. It's going to be off to 40 meters and 75 meters. Not for me. I don't have any radios here. But, George, you have some frequencies for us yet?
Well, I haven't noticed them coming through the chat room, but I believe that the 40-meter net will be on 7.278. I'm not sure about the 20-meter net. They were back on last week, and I believe they're going to keep trying to do that net as long as they've got some propagation. So look around for them. D-Star is, I don't believe we're having a net on that tonight. Echo Link will be star, do drop in star. That's node number 355-800. And I can't talk with this nose. So, oh, I look like a pig now. 7-3, guys.
Oh, my God. 7278 for 40 meters are warming up, as you can hear right now.
Like I said, the last couple of weeks was really difficult. Anyway, we're here.
All right. All right. Well, good evening, everybody. We appreciate you being here. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next week here. And next week's going to be special. Gordo will be live in the Pleasant Hope. We'll both be together getting ready for the Lebanon Midwest ARRL convention. So we're going to have fun next week. And George will be there on Thursday. Carol's coming in Thursday, so it all happens next week. But we'll see you right back here on Ham Nation. Tell all your friends and have fun on the air this week. Bye-bye for now. This is K9EID.
Yeah, buying business there, Dave. You know, I met up with there. Had a great time over the weekend. And so did Cindy, my girlfriend. Okay, so let's do this here. Let me hit this button here and this button there. And hello from Joy. This is Whiskey Tango 6 Hotel.